Osiris.
I'm David Goldstein.
I am Brian Brinkman.
And you're tuned into a bonus episode of Beyond the Pond. Generally speaking, this is the podcast in which Brian and myself utilize the music of Phish to introduce the listener to other bands, generally non-jam bands, that we think that they might be interested in. Because as you know, we love Phish. We are Phish fans. Sometimes Phish fans get a bit myopic and only listen to Phish, so we try to link them to some other bands. However, it's not entirely what we're doing this episode. Brian, what you got?
Yeah, this is a bit of a special episode here. So about 10 days ago, as of recording, I had the chance to go and see Umphrey's McGee up at Red Rocks, and I had a really cool opportunity to sit down backstage with keyboardist in the band, Joel Cummins, for about a 30-45 minute interview. Got to go over some questions I'd always had about the band, talk a little bit about his personal influences from a musical standpoint and kind of where he got started as a musician from a serious level. And then got to spend a little bit of time towards the end talking about what he's listening to nowadays, what he'd recommend both fans and musicians everywhere I'd be getting into. So it was a really fun interview. It was a really cool experience. Going backstage at Red Rocks was super, super awesome. And actually, where Joel was sitting when he and I were talking, there was this big picture of Trey right behind him, just smiling, playing guitar at Red Rocks. So that was a pretty cool marrying of experiences. It was a ton of fun.
Yeah, I've been on the Umphrey's train since, I want to say, about 2014. Tried to get into them earlier, didn't really stick. I was a little, me being a longtime Phish fan, a bit jaded, but I think also as Umphrey's gotten older, they've become much better musicians, they write better songs, they do better jams, and in 2014, it just completely clicked for me.
Yeah, you know, I'm similar to you, I'm a little bit behind you. I saw them play at like a backyard barbecue festival in Chicago in 2003, and I was blown away. And then when Phish broke up in 2004, I kind of went in a very different direction musically, and I really just left kind of the jam band community behind. You know, a lot of the music that you and I talk about here kind of started for me during that period in time. And when Phish got back together, I jumped back on the Phish train and didn't really have much space in my kind of musical listening for another band that was going to play 15 to 20 minute songs. And I saw them at some point in 2014 and was definitely intrigued. The light show was really professional and amazing at that point in time. And you could just tell that they were super, super tight and talented. But this last show that I saw was really like, it reminded me of the first time I heard Phish, in the sense that it was just this eye-opening experience. Seeing a band connect, seeing a band jam on a level that they were. They opened up with the song Gurgle into Dump City, and like 6 minutes into Dump City, they were in a major key bliss jam. And I was like, this is the type of thing I've always wanted to see Phish do. I've learned since then that the song Women, Wine, and Song is not a jam vehicle and was like a 10 minute long rocker. Ocean Billy was huge. Wappy Sprayberry was like, you know, seeing Phish play one of their big songs like mid second set was just such a cool experience. And then the All in Time encore just left me with such a huge smile on my face.
Yeah, for me, Umphrey's, they scratch a different itch than Phish does, because they're both jam bands, and they kind of both draw similar crowds, but I kind of like to say, if we're comparing them to food, if Phish is like a five-course meal at like a three-star Michelin restaurant, then Umphrey's is more like a buffalo chicken pizza with like 240 ounces on your couch and your boxers. And I love both, but I like both at different times. But when Umphrey's is on and they're together and on the same page, they sound like they're shot out of a fucking cannon. And I think that's all something that we could use a bit more of in our lives these days.
Yeah, I will say it, and I'll attribute some of this to you. Since we started our podcast, my appreciation and interest and just overall love for bands like Rush and Yes and King Crimson has just grown exponentially. And I think that in hindsight was the missing link. There's definitely, you have to have a serious appreciation for kind of mathematical progressive rock to really appreciate what Umphrey's McGee is doing a lot of the time. And I don't know if I had that in the past. And so I think it was definitely, per their most recent album, it was not them, it was me. I couldn't connect the dots. And I, for whatever reason, recent influences, I think the show setting, I was there with my dad, which was a really cool experience. It was his first show at Red Rocks. We were eighth row center. It was the exact type of setting that I needed to really like finally get that experience. I'd been, definitely curious about it. I'd listened to a lot of their Hall of Fame compilations. You've recommended a ton for me, and it kind of just all came at the perfect time, which was super cool to have to experience.
I'll just give some brief credit to Mark Lesh, who's certainly, I guess you could call him my Umphrey Sherpa a long time ago. He kept giving me shows. He basically wouldn't take no for an answer. And after a while, I was like, okay, I get it. These guys are pretty fucking good. But yeah, if you ever wanted to imagine Rush as a jam band, or maybe the Police with Andy Summers actually being the most skilled member as opposed to Stuart Copeland or Sting, or Yngwie Malmsteen Fantasy Camp with Terry Bozzio on drums and Steve Vai on second guitar, it's kind of like Umphrey's McGee. They're big on the covers of Guitar World and Modern Drummer, and they definitely bring an element of prog rock technicality and tightness that is otherwise kind of absent from the jam band scene. Plus they've got songs, so I know there's a lot of some new younger bands out there that have similar chops but don't have much in the way of verse, chorus, verse. But one of the things, I guess, from Umphrey's from about, I'd say 2011, 2012 on, is that it's gotten to the point where the songs actually can match up to the jams, which I guess that's pretty important for me. Once I realized that they had some hooks, I was, well, let me give them a chance.
That's huge for me as well. So got like a 30, 45 minute interview here. You'll hear some stuff with me and Joel going back and forth. From an audio standpoint, just kind of note, I recorded this on my phone using an app, and the audio quality is not as ideal as we get here on Beyond the Pond. So I do apologize for that, but you will be able to hear it. And hope that you guys enjoy this. Definitely proud of the fact that I got a chance to speak with Joel, and I'm excited for you guys to hear it. And I gotta make it that. Like, I gotta come here
multiple times. We're close by.
We're up in Chaffee Park, so like Sunnyside, Highlands area. It's a nice little spot.
Awesome.
Yeah, man.
Well, nice work making the move.
It's been a lot. It's been good.
Nice hat as well.
Thank you. I figured I had to wear some.
Nice comeback today.
Did you see any of that? Did you hear about it?
I saw a little bit of it, but we were sound checking for most of it.
We were sitting there watching it going, this is like the worst game of the season. And then it was unbelievable.
The other thing is that the win doesn't really instill confidence in the team either.
Right. You know?
You're like,
right.
We got a win, but we did not deserve to win.
That was, I said to him,
right when it happened, I was like, that was the worst win of the season. But I'll take it.
Right.
So, you got a couple of minutes?
Yeah, so we can go to probably like 7:10.
Perfect.
So probably like half an
hour. I have a few questions. I just wanted to kind of like, so I don't know if you're aware, so my podcast takes, we initially start with fish jams. And the whole idea is to get people outside of the fish community. Outside of like just listening to fish.
Sure.
Because as you probably know, playing an event like this, everyone just wants to like dive deeper, deeper. And
yeah.
You have a ton of influences as a musician. And I think one of the things that really drew me to talking to you about this is the more I listen to you guys, the more I hear this kind of step from like the Grateful Dead almost taking the first 50 years of the last century, fish taking like the next 20, and you guys taking like this MTV, Napster, everything is available at all times generation, where you can listen to all music at any time,
right,
and it can go
right.
From one thing to another, and you kind of like put that and be like astute.
Ah, yeah, sure.
So my biggest curiosity is, you know, really based around your guys' inspiration,
sure.
You know, what you're listening to. I think that what we've found from a fish standpoint is it helps people to hear fish and then hear all this other music as well.
Right.
That they're not exposed to. But kind of just get started generally. You guys have been on the road for like a week. How's it been going?
Good. Yeah, we played basically three warm-up shows for
okay.
Red Rocks. So we were in Buffalo, Boston, and Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Nice.
Three really good venues
yeah.
for us and markets for us. So, yeah, we felt great coming into it. And, yeah, it's just nice to have a show like Red Rocks where you're like, okay, we've already, you know, we've got all the jitters out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and starting to feel a little more natural up on stage. You know,
yeah.
the first 10 times, you come to Red Rocks, you step on stage, you're like, oh my God.
A little
really?
Shell shock.
This is, yeah, this is really, but it, you know, it's a sense of awe and it's kind of surrealness too, because it's such a privilege to be able to do this
totally.
And to bring our fans to this. You know,
totally.
People come from all over the country.
Totally.
They come from Colorado, but you know, this is a huge destination for
right.
people.
Yeah,
absolutely. So. Yeah, so I'd say we're feeling great. I thought we had two really, really strong first shows of the Red Rocks run.
Yeah, I did too.
I loved Thursday night, and I loved last night, too.
Second set last night just felt like it flowed together in a really unique way.
Yeah,
yeah.
We had a lot of improv in the second set last
totally.
Night, which, you know, this crowd, this is what they're looking for.
Right,
they want to hear the jams for sure in Colorado. But yeah, we have a lot of new music that we've obviously been playing over the last 6 months and now even the last 2 months with
yeah.
The album that
yeah.
we put out in May. And so we're still kind of practicing those a lot and like
okay.
getting them under the fingers and working those in. So that it's been a, you know, it's always kind of a little bit of a recharge to be able to get out on tour and be like, oh, we have all this new material that people
totally.
Want to hear.
Totally.
Yeah.
Do you, kind of on that point, do you find most tours you need a couple shows to get settled? And like, do you find like surprises come up there that come back later in the tour from a musical standpoint or?
I don't think at this point we need too much warm up. What we do try to do is set ourselves up with like a little bit of a smaller show for the first show.
Okay.
Jumping into it and like, you know, having to play for 10,000 people in New York City like the first time you've played in a month, probably not the best
yeah.
idea.
There's going to be a lot of jitters.
So yeah, we kind of consider that sort of stuff when we're booking our tours and routing so that, you know, we set ourselves up for the most success and comfort level. And I think also, you know, we started talking about, okay, well, what do we want to do at Red Rocks next week? And so there's just, you know, having that conversation with everyone in person is still really valuable.
Right.
I think, you know, it's one of those things in the age of technology, having everybody in the same room working
right.
together, it's like it doesn't always happen like
totally.
That anymore. So,
do you guys spend a lot of time planning for like a show like this, like a run like this? Or do you look at this the same way you look at any show like on the tour?
I think it
depends.
And you
just have to hope that something happens.
It depends, you know, because we look at every show and say, okay, what did we play in this market, you know, the last couple times
okay.
so that we don't repeat doing the
totally.
Exact same thing we just did. I mean, odds of that happening now are pretty low.
Totally.
But you never know. For some reason, it's like, oh, this song always seems to get played in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is like a song that makes you think of Milwaukee for some reason. You know what I mean?
Totally,
that's
totally.
An example. Yeah, so we went through and... we have this site called allthingshumphreys.com
yeah.
and you can do all of your stats. You know, there are probably a lot of Fish fans who are very into that as well.
Yeah, totally.
So we have a lot of fans that do that. But the band also uses it to help create set lists and song lists for runs and stuff. So, yeah, so I'll go through and, like, you know, figure out what we played most recently in every, you know, every region and make sure we don't repeat that stuff. So, you know, we want the people that are coming to 25 or 30 shows a year, we want them to have that experience where they're not disappointed by, oh, you know, this is the third weekend in a row I've heard Puppet String.
Right.
And it's like, we know it's a good song and people like it, but it's also, we have enough material at this point that we can kind of move things around and not repeat too many things.
Well, and that kind of leads me to a question. You know, you guys really seem to thrive on fan service. And it's one thing that I love about you guys, more so than really like any other band that I know. It seems like you guys are a part of the community in terms of the conversation. You're incredibly active on Twitter, talking with fans immediately after the show. I've seen you in threads with people talking about shows 10, 15 years ago, and most artists that like I listen to say, I don't even know what I played when I walked off the stage. You know, you seem like you have a real fans appreciation for this.
I say that too, actually.
Where does that come from? I mean, where does that desire to really, like, communicate with fans and with the larger community come from for you? Is that just like a natural thing? Are you just like sharing this like everyone else as a fan? Or
yeah, well, you know, I think for me, I'm and I think this is true for a lot of guys in the band, we're fans of music too.
Totally.
And a lot of times, you know, I feel like back in the old days there was this kind of like, oh, well, if you become an artist, then, you know, you really shouldn't listen to other people's, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I think that's out there for inspiration, and you should always be open to having those moments of inspiration by other artists and finding other music. I mean, we live in a time when there's more music available to listen to than ever before.
Yeah.
So it's pretty incredible, and I think we should take advantage of that. But I'm coming from that perspective of, like, I'm a fan of music too. And, you know, there are a lot of bands that I have in common that I like with people, whether it's, you know, like Fish from this scene or Miles Davis, yeah, or King Crimson or Radiohead, you know, where there can be a lot of fun conversations about music. And I think it's, you know, that part of the social media of getting to interact with people and then taking the next step and, like, actually hanging out with people and meeting them in person. Yeah. To me, it's the kind of taking the personal elements of technology via social media and using that to have, like, a more personal relationship. So a lot of these people that I joke around with now, it's like, oh, we've actually hung out in person before.
Yeah, right.
And so I think that's a pretty, it's a cool opportunity to be able to have those sort of things with somebody who really likes your music. And, you know, we're just normal Midwest guys.
Totally.
And, you know, we live in an age when, you know, it used to be the musicians would make their public appearances once in a while, and they would come down from the mountain and visit the people, and then they would go away, and that was it. And it's not really like that anymore. And people want to have that, you know, it's only going to help them feeling close to the music if
absolutely
they actually feel like they know you as a person a little
absolutely
bit. I mean, as long as you're not, like, a huge asshole.
Yeah, right.
You
know? there's like, a line that's got to be drawn.
Yeah, man, really got to know him, and I should regret that.
I don't think I'll be going to see it.
I used to love that music. Not anymore.
Well, and you said, you know, obviously you're still a fan of music. That's got to be a huge aspect of why you continue to do what you do. Going back, like, to the start, do you remember the first album, the first band that, like, really made you want to play piano and, like, really made you want to stick with it?
That's a good question. I don't know if there was really a first. I mean, the first inspirations that I really think of actually go back to my piano teacher, Kathy Best, at the First Baptist Church of Western Springs.
Yeah.
And I took lessons from her, and the reason I took lessons from her is because we would go to church, and I'd hear this, like, you know, it's like Bach cantatas and Mozart pieces, and I just assumed that's, like, what every church was like.
Right.
Oh,
right,
everybody
right
has this, you know, total incredible musician that is contributing. And so that really inspired me early on. I definitely enjoyed rock and roll. I mean, like, the first tape that I bought, I think, was Van Halen, 1984, okay. at age 9 or 10 or something.
Okay.
But I mostly bought that tape, not because I really liked Van Halen, but because their song Jump was the song WGN used as bumper music whenever the Cubs games would come on. So it made me think of, you know, that great Cubs team.
Yeah.
I also bought, Purple Rain, and my mom eventually threw that tape out because she didn't approve of the lyrics.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So, you know, one successful purchase, one that wasn't so successful.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it's interesting that you ask, like, so if I can move forward a little bit,
point
where I really made the decision where I was like, okay, I think playing music is what I want to do for a living. It actually came from the Notre Dame Glee Club, and our director, Dan Stowe, is actually coming to our show tonight. And he was, it was his first year at Notre Dame, and it was kind of like a rah-rah barbershop thing before that, but he wanted to introduce serious music, and so we learned all this Renaissance polyphony, like 16th century Palestrina, Josquin des Prez, Cristobal de Morales, and for me, singing all this like amazing polyphonic Latin music, we got to perform it and record an album in the Basilica at Notre Dame.
Wow.
And that was what actually made me want to do music, and it's funny because it ended up being rock and roll, but that was the moment when I was just like, you know, singing this music and performing with a group is a feeling that is completely like anything else. But I really enjoyed the group aspect of it, that there were, you know, everybody was contributing, and I think that's something that is very true for how Humphreys McGee operates, even though it's quite a bit different than Renaissance polyphonic vocal music. I love bands that are greater than the sum of where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Totally.
You know, I think that's true for a lot of the bands that I really like. And to me, that's the most compelling thing that you can find, is a group of musicians that have a story that they've decided to share together with each other,
right.
and to share with an audience over time. And I love that. So bands that can play their, you know, a catalog that consists of most of their history of music, I think is a really cool thing, because you've taken listeners on this huge journey.
Show by show.
Yeah.
You can hear a song you played 20 years ago, a song that you've
Right.
You know, 2 or 3 months ago you released it.
Like we played our song Divisions last night, which is one of the first ones that we played live in 1998. And we hadn't played it since September of 2017.
Wow.
So, you know, it's definitely like one of our more well-known songs, but we were able to, you know, we have enough songs now, we gave it a little break, but then coming back to it last night, it's like, oh yeah, this feels good.
You feel it right away.
Yeah.
And did you encore with that?
We did.
That was great.
First night.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I think you guys came out, I saw you guys at the Ravinia in Chicago.
Right.
Like 4 years ago.
Yep.
And you came out to, blank on the name, but it was a classical number that you then brought in, like, very, very specific Humphreys riffs. It became more dissonant, and then you went into Divisions, and it was like a 15-minute Divisions. It was a fantastic way to open a show.
Nice.
And that's one of those songs that, like, it goes away, and then when it comes back, everybody feels that sort of, like, sense of rejoice.
Right.
Did you find that you were getting a lot of demand from people, or was it you guys just, like, wanting to play it, like...
A few people definitely pointed it out, so I was aware of the fact that we hadn't played it at this point.
Yeah.
There are a few songs, you know, that fall by the wayside. We'll get to August and be like, oh, we haven't played it. We haven't played it. We're in month 8 of the year and we haven't played it yet. We should probably play that song.
Totally.
Purposefully
leave a song dangling, just knowing that, like,
if you drop it
at a specific show, people are going to lose it?
I mean, a little bit. We've talked about playing Divisions at least a couple times in the past month.
Okay.
And it's one of those where Brennan really needs to feel super confident vocally.
Okay.
And so if ever he's like, you know what, it's a little risky tonight, we're not going to do it.
Okay.
So I think that's another thing. It's been on there, and we've had to call a couple audibles. But yeah, the other night he's like, all right, I think I'm feeling it. I think I can do it. So
I love that.
So it was nice to get to that point and be able to throw that out at the end of the night, give him a little... a little something for the effort, for sticking around, making it to Thursday.
So it's funny that you brought up Kathy Best, because I was I didn't learn piano from her, but I sang in choir and she played in choir.
Oh, right.
Did you sing under Bob Boyd?
So Bob Boyd and Connie Lydett were also hugely important in me really falling in love with music. And I would say the choirs that were under Bob Boyd's direction taught me so much about dynamics and the power of when you execute a group dynamic well and tightly, how amazing that can be.
That's best.
So there are very few groups that I've ever performed in that had that level of precision, and that was an important thing to learn.
Yeah, I grew up loving music, went to LT for high school, and was kind of pushed into choir as like, just do this your freshman year, you get it in middle school.
Right?
And I didn't value until junior year, when I was in men's choir, how incredible it was to learn under Bob Boyd. Like how he changed the way that I heard music, introducing Requiem to us, you know, and like we sang that in our varsity choir. Is there anything like from them? Like I know you said dynamics from them, but is there anything from them that you took that you still keep with you as you're playing music to, like, to this day?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say the actual music, like it's awesome with Spotify now. I've gone back and like listening to Ubi Caritas and you know, some of these amazing pieces of music that I performed back in the day. I think I would just go back to talking about the group dynamic and you know, how powerful it is. With six people on stage, I mean, for a rock band, that's a lot of people. Six people in a rock band is basically like a 50-person choir.
Right. There's so much happening at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're really, the thing that I think really helps us is having visual cues and having those talkback microphones to where we can communicate in the moment to do something that'll be a really tight effect. So, for instance, one of us might say, okay, next downbeat coming up, everyone stop, just guitars. And so Jefferson Waffle, who's running lights, has his in-ears on as well, so he can hear us doing directions, and then he'll nail the lighting cue and focus just on the two guitars right there at that moment.
That's so wild.
Yeah, so being able to create...
Well, then you have that, you basically have six people with you. I mean, that's like the fishnet. I mean, you have, you have like all the, you have the lighting guy in it as well, who's helping you guys as well. It's amazing.
So I think, you know, that's one of our big advantages, is we have the ability to communicate with each other live, to do kind of cool little moments of just changing back and forth. I mean, people really like something that we do that has been called a bounce back jam. And so, you know, it's like we'll start with one idea, we'll move to something else, and then maybe go back and forth between these three or four times. But I love pushing to that moment where it's like, are they going to go back? Are they going to go back? Oh, they're not going back. Oh, they went back.
And then everyone loses it, because everyone's on that,
So, but there's something to be said about, you know, improvising in that sense of throwing different things and having a little juxtaposition and contrast, because then people recognize, oh, we just heard that before, and, you know, it's like gives them a little bit of a story to hang on to, as opposed to just an improvisation that starts here and it's just linearly goes for 15 minutes and doesn't comment back on anything that happened before it. So,
well, it's one of the things I felt that listening back to last night's set, there's like a true arc to the set. It's like you guys actually went through, like there's a flow to it that it almost feels like you created an album on stage.
Ah, nice.
It's just something that I love. I mean, you know, I'll get that with Fish, you get that with the Dead. That's something really unique to this genre of music, you know,
right,
the larger jam band community that, you know, you just don't get when you go and see that. You know, you buy a CD, you love the band, you go and see them, you see those songs, they're out of order from what the CD is, because why would they play them in the same order, you know, for you? For you guys, it's like you walk on stage and you can actually tell a story, and I love that aspect. Do you guys ever feel, like, what does a good show or a great show feel like to you when you walk off stage?
You know, for me, it's mostly about like kind of managing that flow and energy and arc, and also having the moments of improvisation where we are taking chances and things work out. And sometimes they don't always work out. So part of having a good show can also be having something that didn't go quite as you planned it to be, but that you recovered in a good way and you were able to move past something that didn't quite work out relatively quickly. I think that's, you know, being able to stay in the moment is really the big challenge on stage, because, you know, when you have four or five different people who might be kind of musical directors in any given moment. One person might be thinking we're going one way, and one person might be thinking we're going the other way. So you have to be able to be willing to let go of your idea and be like, okay, that was fine, but we're doing this. It was good that you tried to have an idea.
It's like a conversation where, like, you can be making a really long, elaborate point, you lose people, and then, okay, we got to get back on track.
Right. Yeah,
it's a tough thing, I'm guessing, to gauge.
So, you know, depending on the night and kind of how we're feeling as a band, there might be nights where we kind of lean a little bit heavier. There might be nights when we lean a little bit more toward the, like, the dancier side of stuff. And sometimes that's intentional, but sometimes it's just kind of, that's the vibe of how this group of songs, you know, we made a song list of 25 songs that we could use, and you know, then here are the 16 or 17 that we chose, and that's what created the vibe for the night.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
I just have a couple other questions.
Okay.
That's a great flag. That was an amazing game.
I imagine. And the next game, too.
So one thing that really interests me about you guys just celebrated your 20th year. That has become the norm now. Bands stay around for 20, 25, 30, 40 years. At one point, that was totally abnormal. Yeah, you didn't want to go see guys in their 40s, 50s, 60s. And a lot of that had to do with drugs, misbehavior, lack of focus, lack of partnership. You know, there's a lot of reasons that you can point to bands breaking up before they kept going. What do you guys see keeps you together? And are there any bands? Is there any, like, artists that, like...
We have so many bills to pay.
Okay. I just go for, like, I get it. The practical answer.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, with a band like Humphreys McGee at this point, 20 years in, we've kind of created our own little world.
Okay.
Of, you know, of music, of camaraderie. We've treated our business like a family, too, and I think that's been a really important thing that, you know, we've had very little turnover with our crew. These guys are on the salary, they all have health insurance. So having that consistency of knowing that, like, we're all counting on each other and we're all going to do our work and we're all going to be there for each other, and then we all like each other and want to hang out with each other off the stage is really what it's all about. I mean, what else do you want from life, you know? But I mean, the most important part, it starts with the musically, we're still challenging each other, and we've been able to you know, despite all these stylistic differences, really continue to all push forward in a few different directions at the same time. And so I think being supportive of each other musically with the songwriting is really important. But, you know, there really is, like, it's like these guys are my brothers now.
Right.
And all that hard work of, you know, there were a lot of years of driving around in a van and moving all of our own gear and, you know, no sleep and not getting paid very well and all that. And it's like, listen, we put all that time in because we hoped we would be where we are now. So let's not blow it now. Let's keep pushing, you know, keep writing music and continuing to improvise and push each other on the improvisational, you know, kind of frame. Yeah.
I remember the first time I ever saw you guys was at the Backyard Bash in June of 2003.
Oh, okay.
And, I think you guys were setting up your stage, or at least It wasn't there. It was not like a.
We didn't get a bus and a truck until like 2005.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, it was very much, I felt like I was going to see a local band, but a band that, like, blew me away. That when I walked away from it, I was like, that's like every sound I want to hear all in one. But it was crazy to see you guys then, like, get up and, like, move your keyboard and move your amps. Like, So I totally get that. So last question. I asked this for everyone. What are you listening to nowadays? Any new records, any new bands, anything that's, like, come back from the past for you that's really blown your mind?
Well, I mean, let's just look at Spotify.
There we go. It's the easiest way to do it.
Let's see what's happening here. I listen to, like, a lot of music when I'm flying because that just kind of chills me out. So,
totally.
So I'm actually listening to, like, a lot of vocal music.
Oh, interesting.
Around that, let's see. So a lot of Claude Debussy too. I really like listening to that stuff. Recently played. Here we go. Roy Ayers. Have we been listening to? You know Roy Ayers?
I don't know.
Oh man, like some of the greatest funk out there. He's still making music. but like 70s stuff. Yeah.
One with the Funkadelics.
Yeah, really great stuff. So I'd recommend checking that out. Donny Hathaway still gets lots of spins. I love that. I mean, we share love for the Stack stuff.
Yes.
I'll just put the Stack stuff on shuffle, you know?
And just keep it going.
Yeah. It's outstanding.
Don't tell him that. He'll take my collection.
Bill Frisell gets a lot of play with me. I really love, you know, like Unspeakable, Nashville, East West. There's a Best Of folk album that I listen to a lot. Dig that. Listen to King Singers. Let's see, Hug of Thunder, Broken Social Scene.
Nice. Great album.
I was listening to the new John Coltrane, the Lost album that just came out. Best of Edgar Meyer, I was checking out. That's a really good, it's a good playing album. Snarky Puppy, great band. Listen to those guys all the time. The Social Network, which is by Trent Reznor.
Yeah, the soundtrack.
Yeah,
that first track.
I like listening to that for some of the sounds.
I think you and I talked recently about Music for Airports.
Oh yeah, Brian Eno.
First track on The Social Network always takes me to that. The way the piano is just hanging there.
Miles Davis, Dark Magus, live at Carnegie Hall. Robert Glasper, I like listening to his stuff a lot. Maurice Duraflay, The Requiem. I listened to Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer.
God,
that was pretty
such
cool.
A great album.
Local Natives.
Yep.
Big fan of those guys too.
LA band.
Yep. Anomaly, you know who Anomaly is?
I've heard.
DJ, great stuff. Metropole, great album. So there you go. There's all and Pantera, because we played Walk as a little
tribute to
Paul.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, I can see you guys really hitting that hard.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah.
That was a really fun
that's
one.
That's gonna be
do,
really fun
so.
One to do. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate your time so much.
Thank you, Brian,
for tonight. This is gonna be great.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, dude.
To all the music lovers out there, I hope you find something in Humphreys McGee that you like.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody, but you know, neither is Scotch.
There you go. Is there a jam, particular jam that you'd recommend us playing out for people to listen to?
Oh, okay. Let's do something recent. Let me see what is something that I've liked for the last couple nights. Right?
Yeah, that's work. Works perfectly.
Might as well pick something from Red Rocks. Let's see. Why don't we do Miss Tinkle's Overture from July 5th, 2018, Red Rocks.
It's a great
Actually,
answer.
We could do that, or since we talked about it, we could do the Divisions.
Divisions would work as well. I like
How about that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Divisions.
We'll play Divisions.
Awesome, man.
There we go. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with our own Brian Brinkman with Umphrey's McGee keyboardist Joel Cummins. I certainly enjoyed it and learned a few things about Umphrey's that I did not know.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun to sit down with Joel. He's one thing you'll hear, you heard in there, Joel and the Umphrey's guys are like, they're just so good at fan service and they seem so excited to engage with the community and be a part of the larger community. And it's something that I just really admire from them as a band, and really respect. It's something you just don't see every day with, rock stars on that level, I guess you would say.
At the end of the day, they're all just dudes and they happen to be very nice guys at that. So we hope you enjoyed the interview. On that note, I'm David Goldstein.
I am Brian Brinkman.
And come back next time. I'm not exactly sure when this bonus episode is going to run, so I'm not going to tell you 1 week or 2 weeks, but rest assured, we will come back. We will join hands. We will talk about Fish, talk about some other bands most likely, and go beyond the pond.
Osiris.